It does cost a lot of money to launch a satellite network, to maintain that network. You're building out satellites. Elon's got a slightly different path in the fact that he's got his own ride to space. And so that certainly helps in terms of the propensity and the amount of satellites that they can launch. But it's not cheap, and not everybody can do this.
Budget overruns, brick devices, data breaches. Building connected products is hard. Welcome to Over the Air, sharp, unfiltered conversations with executives about their IoT journeys, the mistakes they made, the lessons they learned, and what they wish they'd known when they started. I'm your host, Ryan Prosser.
Welcome back to Over the Air, IoT Connected Devices and the Journey. My name is Ryan Prosser, CEO of Very, and today we're joined by Ian Itz of Iridium, and we're going to be talking about building products and engineering around open source standards versus proprietary standards in IoT, something near and dear to our heart here at Very. Ian, thanks for being on the show.
Ryan, thanks for having me. Very excited.
Awesome. So for those that don't know, tell us about Iridium. You guys are doing some pretty cool stuff, but maybe not a household name that everybody knows.
Yeah, so Iridium's been around for 20 plus years. We originally started as part of Motorola, and we operate a constellation based out of Tyson's Corner, Virginia, right outside the nation's capital. It's a 66 satellite constellation that we provide global coverage specifically for voice communications, but more importantly, for IoT and data communications around the globe. And so that's our mission. We provide kind of the same level of service across the board, and there is virtually no segment of the earth that's untouched by our network footprint.
And that is literally true. So you guys are everywhere building these products. A lot of it you can't talk about. Some of it you can. I think the audience might be able to fill in some blanks on some of the things you can't quite come out and say. But you guys build the products that are incorporated in other people's products. Expand on that a little bit. And I want to take you on a journey that leads us towards what does that look like to build a product others build upon? But give us some of the basics to start with.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been successful in IoT for a variety of reasons. But number one is because we leverage our partners in our ecosystem. And so the way that we go to market is by providing core technology, so typically in the form of a module, an embedded module, that customers and partners can take and integrate those into a finished good, which then they go in and sell into their niche markets, right? And so this wholesale model has been really kind of powerful for us in terms of innovation and arming partners, again, with kind of that core technology. We build small transceivers that are low power, small form factor, as I mentioned, and theoretically low cost. And so pairing that up with a very simple antenna, our partners can create all kinds of devices that operate in pretty much every industry around the globe, in every environment. And so that's been one of our mainstays, and we really like to support the community in that way in terms of providing kind of that core technology.
And one of the things that in our industry, our meaning mine, yours, IoT more broadly, that has happened in the last decade or so is there was this moment where the walled garden approach, the proprietary approach, seemed like there was those that read the writing on the wall that like, this is not the best way. I'm thinking of, I don't know, like the Blackberries, these walled gardens where it's like, use our closed ecosystem. And of course, Apple did pull that off. But for the most part, it became open source. Let's play nicely together. Iridium seems to have gotten with that program. Others didn't. Many of those that didn't survive it. What did that look like for you guys developing? And you didn't get that right initially, but with time seemed to have gotten it right.
Yeah, I think satellite specifically in the last couple of years has been extremely popular in terms of the media and, you know, what Elon Musk is doing in terms of propagating an entire huge system. And so there's been a lot of publicity around satellite and up and coming in terms of IoT and direct to device. But we started down the path of a very, as you mentioned, closed walled garden proprietary system that required you to have a basic underlying knowledge of the network and how to build devices that operate efficiently. And so that worked for a very long time. We were very successful in terms of being able to support that community and that environment. But as we continue to mature and as we move towards a more kind of standards-based environment as an industry, we certainly see that allowing developers to leverage open source, you know, libraries, to be able to leverage things like Arduino in terms of our development kits, really kind of speeds the time to market and allows them to kind of use tools that are already available and not having to recreate the wheel kind of every time that you're going down a new application development. And so for us, kind of the writing's been on the wall for a little while in terms of moving towards a standards-based approach. And so we'll be doing that. So we'll be pivoting pretty significantly in terms of the way that we've offered product in the past, you know, developer kits, and moving just down that path. The other side is obviously we're repurposing some of the network to be able to handle NB-IoT. And so that's really the next step in terms of that evolution as well, in converting some of the network from a proprietary implementation that we have on our data services to now moving towards a more standards-based approach with NB-IoT and adhering to those 3GPP standards.
Very cool. And one of the things you were telling me earlier was you felt like some of the products that you guys rolled out initially were a bit over-engineered, maybe a little bit difficult to build on top of. And that was kind of a back to the drawing board moment. I'm curious, first of all, am I characterizing that right? Second of all, what does it look like for a company to recognize that? Like, literally, how are you confirming that that's true and like working that back into the system? And just, I don't know, give us some color on that.
Yeah. So we have a pretty robust support organization. And so, you know, a lot of where we gather the intelligence to be able to make a move or pivot from a design path is just that, is being able to talk to partners and getting that feedback from them in terms of what's been difficult, what's been easy. And we found that with a particular product that we had, we took the step moving towards a finished good rather than providing the core module. And with that, we learned that sometimes it's best to keep things simple from an IoT hardware perspective. And so really that does lean itself towards wanting to be a more open standard or open source in terms of the community. And so apart from, you know, sales potentially not being where we wanted them to be for that product, it's really about talking to the developers. And that's kind of our core, you know, where we live, and having that daily interaction and talking to partners and talking to those developers that are creating new and interesting solutions and getting their feedback. And so overwhelmingly came back that, hey, we think we could be more successful if we could leverage what's out there already rather than having to build everything from the ground up. And so while the hardware is very solid in terms of the features that it has, and I like to call it the Swiss Army knife of our IoT product portfolio, it can be daunting sometimes in terms of having to build the entire software ecosystem from the ground up. And so what we're doing moving forward is going to be leveraging more of that open community where, as I mentioned before, you're not having to recreate the wheel again. You can leverage what that community is doing. I mean, plus we'll start to cater to a different community as well, right? More of that maker and developer environment or community that we're trying to get after. And that's really one of the big things for us, is really making sure that people have an easy experience with Iridium, grabbing the product and being able to transmit within a couple of hours of receiving, you know, your dev kit. That's the goal, right? And for satellite, that seems like a daunting task, but I think we've nailed it with our new offering and pretty excited in terms of what that'll bring and the speed to market that it'll enable.
You're talking about like open source protocols and open source standards. One of the things that we've heard on the show, and certainly at Very, one of the things we've experienced is there's times where open source is fantastic and there's times where it's not. And one of the times where it's not, let's see if I can characterize this right, is like when you're trying to build enterprise tooling or an enterprise offering on top of a open source platform versus like a standard like Bluetooth or whatever, and everybody agrees that's the standard, talk the same language. What's been you guys' experience, and I don't know, what's the Iridium kind of like stance right now on what kinds of open source tooling is definitely great? And what are some things where you're like, look, we're not going to play in that area?
Yeah, I think it's really more about enabling the device. And so getting at some of the underlying protocols, or at least the underlying mechanism in driving the device, is not something that we need to expose necessarily. And so the things that sit on top, it's the Bluetooth peripherals that you mentioned. It's working with Wi-Fi. It's some of the stuff that is a bit more standard. And that's where we see kind of leveraging the open source community and really where it makes the most sense. I think when you start to get down to some of the complexities in terms of wanting to develop very custom solutions, then sometimes proprietary makes more sense. But from a satellite perspective, typically these products are being run from the ground up, right? And for that reason, we've got the ability to get in there early and kind of make some of those decisions up front. And so that helps us in terms of offering that open source type of environment. The other thing is that the experience will be a fairly supported and a very curated experience in terms of what we'll be providing in terms of that open source community. And so we will be making sure that everything is extremely well supported, that it's simple, and that, you know, there are the base core pieces that people will use most often. And those will be the pieces that we'll be supporting through how we deliver that to our partners.
You mentioned Iridium's been around for 20 plus years, spun out of Motorola. It's funny, depending on the age of the listener out there, they either know Motorola well or they've never, ever heard of it. They were such a big deal for a while, and most consumers that are of a certain age won't have heard of them at all. You guys are 20 plus years, kind of the prime of life for a technology company. What's next for you guys? I mean, what are you excited about looking forward 24, 25? Give us a look ahead.
Yeah, so I think it's really kind of what I touched on earlier, which is kind of our pivot to NB-IoT and being able to support more D2D type applications. And so for us, we think that that is kind of the next chapter, and that enables kind of mass market adoption to where satellite was something that you only got if you absolutely needed it, right? If your application or your environment dictated that you had to have satellite, that was really the only reason you were going to go for it. I think now as we move towards a more standards-based approach, we'll have this capability of riding alongside any LTE module that's out there. And that's pretty powerful, right? So we'll always kind of be there in the background for devices that want to roam off of standard terrestrial networks. They'll have the ability to roam onto Iridium when they need to get that transmission out. And so I think by eliminating some of the costs from a hardware implementation and then driving down, kind of being really hardcore in terms of what we're doing from a standards-based perspective, I think that's going to yield for us the most that we can get out of the network, which is, again, enabling it for applications that we didn't even think about, but terrestrial networks typically play. And so that's really where we want to kind of be next. And we're making a big investment to move towards that. And we're starting to develop all those relationships now with the MNOs, with the chip manufacturers, to make sure that we've got a solid plan as we move towards it. So it's really, I mean, more and more it is about us moving towards a standards-based approach. And that's really on our IoT business, right? We have other parts of the business that are still using satellite communications that are still kind of single-threaded, very proprietary, serve a very specific need, perhaps in the government space. But as it relates to our IoT business, it is really more about opening up our horizons and being able to attack markets that may have been cost prohibitive in the past. So it's really about driving down the cost of satellite in all reality and making it viable for that many more applications as we move on.
What is happening with the cost of satellite? I mean, for those of us that are not industry insiders like yourself, it's a totally a mysterious industry, not well understood. Starlink just raised, you know, for those of you out there, Starlink customers, you know, we've been through 20% plus. I think I'm paying more than 20% more than I was just a very short time ago. Elon Musk, of course, saying, hey, you know, costs are going up. But we're saying, what costs? You know, you're in space rotating around. I mean, what costs have gone up for you? 20%. What is going on with the cost of satellite? Is that to the extent that it's immune to or highly impacted by inflation and other things? What are some of the cost inputs in that world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of it has to do with the type of constellation that you're running and what types of services you're providing. You know, the Starlink system is very much high throughput, broadband, large aperture antennas. You typically need a power source to get that thing running. And so for the most part, they serve a completely different audience and market than we do, right? We're on the narrowband side. We're providing small chunks of data from, you know, sensors all over the ground and the oceans for that matter, and even up in the air from our aviation line of business. But really, I think it really depends on where the focus is and what people are willing to pay. So for a broadband connection in the middle of nowhere, you want to surf the internet, you want to watch Netflix, that makes economical sense to be able to strap that onto the roof of your home and be able to get those kind of speeds. But at the lower end, we're providing a service that, again, is a narrowband service, small chunks of data, typically in remote areas. And so customers, you know, have a propensity to want to pay a little bit less for that. And so what we end up doing is pricing different activities, different types of services based on the throughput, right? So I think overall and in general, the price of IoT across the board is going down. But it is an expensive endeavor, right? I mean, it does cost a lot of money to launch a satellite network, to maintain that network. You're building out satellites. Elon's got a slightly different path in the fact that he's got his own ride to space. And so that certainly helps in terms of the propensity and the amount of satellites that they can launch. But it's not cheap and not everybody can do this. And that's why you see a lot of companies with great ambitions and what appears to be a solid business model not really make it out of the early funding stages and into actual deployment, right? And so that's one of the big factors in satellite. And that's what also maintains those higher prices is that there's a high cost to entry. There's a high barrier to entry. But once you're in and once you're providing a solid service, then you can continue to grow and continue to offer, you know, new and exciting products. And so for us, again, it's really more about picking up the volume, serving additional customers that weren't in our purview before, but also we've got to stay competitive to a certain extent, right? Customers don't want to pay 10x for their satellite data when they may not need it more than 20% of the time or 10% of the time. And so, yeah, from a cost perspective, it's always been a premium to cellular, but as time moves on and customers look to buy a single plan that's offering ubiquitous coverage, both, you know, on NTN networks and standard terrestrial networks, I think we'll start to see some of those pricing equal out. But I think you'll always see a premium in terms of satellite just based on availability. There's restrictions in terms of the amount of bandwidth and capacity on any given network. And so it's just trying to maintain and stay within those bounds and still offer a service that's compelling. And in our case, something that's global, that's super reliable, that's always available. And it's really, as I mentioned before, we want to stay in our lane, which is at that narrow band end, which is providing SOS messaging, standard messaging in the D2D space, and then providing kind of smaller, really what we consider that IoT data on our legacy services.
One of the things that from device manufacturers here on the show and at Very is pricing firmware updates is like nobody's got it nailed. Like if you sell TVs, it's hard to say how long somebody's going to own that television for, and yet you've got to ship firmware updates, typically over the air firmware updates, for 6-8 years. But like, what if the product lasts 20 years? You know, so how do you price that into the model? Really complicates the P&L calculation on the television. It's like you don't even really know how much you made on a television for until it's in the trash, because it's still driving cost for you until its life is over. And one of the things with consumer devices, and I know this is an area that you guys operate in, you have some consumer device customers and they're connecting. So for those of you out there that are athletes, you know, maybe you have a smartwatch and these smartwatches connect via satellite. And I know this isn't your business, this is your partner's business, but I wonder if maybe you could clue us in. It feels like they're entering into what may be a scary fixed fee deal where they sell a watch for $500, $700, whatever it is, and they're going to have a variable cost for an unknown amount of time. Person might have that watch for a very long time, be connected by satellite. They have an ongoing cost related to that. They got revenue only one time when they sold the watch or the device or whatever. What does that look like from their side of things? Because they're not charging. If you have a smartwatch or a bike computer or anything, you pay one time and that's it. And you've got unlimited for life satellite access. I always thought that was very interesting.
So that's a kind of a multi-part question. I think the first part of it is that from a firmware perspective, right? You mentioned, you know, over-the-air updates and things of that nature. From the consumer perspective, it's a little bit easier because typically folks, after they get back from their trip, they're next to a computer and they can flash those devices at any time, right? And so that's one of the benefits of having a consumer device is that eventually it's going to come back inside and somebody's going to be able to plug it into a computer and be able to update devices firmware, whether it's our firmware or the host device's firmware. So that's a relatively simple task. On the other end of that, we design just for that, right? We design so that firmware updates aren't necessarily required for our devices, right? As long as you can update the host firmware, our devices are built to be able to withstand 10 to 20 years, right? Because that's what they do. So we don't make a lot of underlying network changes to force firmware updates on the core transceivers or the core modules, but the partner solutions will eventually, and often do, provide a mechanism for partners to be able to update that host application firmware, because more is typically changing on their end than it is on the satellite network end, because it's pretty stable. It's been up in the air for a long time. And so there's not a lot required from that perspective. On the other end, if we're talking about kind of the personal communications type devices, you're right. You buy a watch, you buy a bike computer, you're going to spend kind of one-time upfront fee. But a lot of the services that are utilizing satellite are actually, you're paying a monthly service for that, believe it or not. So there is a monthly fee. If you want those devices to be connected to satellite, you can buy a plan. And those plans will enable you to send, you know, X amount of messages to your loved ones, be able to do tracking, you know, in terms of sending breadcrumbs of where you've been, as well as, you know, being able to provide SOS capabilities. And so there's absolutely a cost there. And for those hikers and those campers and those folks that like to be outside, either because they want to be or because their job takes them to those places, there's usually some type of subscription. And it's based on your use type. If you're a casual user, there's a plan for you. If you're a super user and you're going to be using this thing all day, you've got a teenager that wants to send text messages to their friends while they're out camping, you can buy the upper end plan. But yeah, for the satellite piece, And typically for the cellular pieces, there's always going to be that subscription-based fee. And that's what makes it attractive to those types of companies that are offering those devices, right? Because they're getting the initial hardware fee, but they're also able to sell value-added services on top, not just the satellite piece, but all the other components that kind of go into that, right? Which is the dots on a map or integration with your other devices and health monitoring and all those things that we love our smart devices for.
Last question before we let you go, and I do appreciate you coming on the show today. I always love to ask people that have been in the industry, who out there in IoT land do you think not enough people are talking about doing good work?
For us, it's not super sexy, right, in terms of the IoT products. So, you know, the consumer stuff certainly is, right? There's lots of good advertising and it's a compelling story when you sell somebody a device that consumer can use to message virtually anywhere in the world. But a lot of the cool stuff that we see and a lot of the companies that are making good headway with satellite are lesser known and they're operating in kind of their niche environment. So a good one that comes to mind is a company called GeoForce. They're based out of Dallas, Texas, and they work primarily in oil and gas, oil field servicing, and so asset tracking, right? And so they make a pretty unique product, which is a solar power tracking device that I'm holding up here in my hand. And this thing is designed to live out in the field for 10 plus years, has two batteries, it's fully epoxied. So this thing is essentially a brick, but it's really, really popular in terms of that community because of its robustness. It can be beat around and it can live in the field for years and years at a time because of that solar harvesting capability. And that's important from a satellite perspective because you're not able to go out there and service those devices all the time. But yeah, GeoForce is doing a great job in terms of kind of their mission and staying focused in their industry and delivering kind of robust products that are rock solid, right? And so it's just another great example of being able to provide a partner with, you know, our core modules and them going out and developing a product that hits the mark for them and their customers. And so that's the type of customer that we like to foster, that we like to work with. And shout out to those guys because they're doing a great job in terms of getting these satellite trackers out there.
Very cool. All right. Tip of the cap to GeoForce. Well, Ian, that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Ryan, thanks for having me. I had a great time and always looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, cool. And thank you for listening. Join us next time as we have another executive talk about things that went wrong on a journey that went right.
Over the Air is presented by Verri, your trusted source for cutting-edge technology solutions. For the latest updates and exclusive content, be sure to follow Over the Air on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else great podcasts are found. On behalf of the team here at Verri, thanks for listening.